So this was the parsha that we just completed this week. Parshas Kisisa, of course, is the equidistant, I guess, parsha, the middle parsha in the presentation of the Mishkan, and of course it focuses in particular on the Chet HaEgel, and the impact of the Chet HaEgel, is something which is axiomatic. We know that Chazal think that the Egel was one of the most severe violations in the history of Klal Yisrael, and that it had a tremendous, profound impact on the unfolding history of Klal Yisrael. And this took, I think, two different forms. Number one, or three different forms. Number one, there are a lot of what might have beens, had there not been an Egel, the Mole Lochoti Israel. We find that in Chazal quite a bit. But in addition to that, some of those are also referred to Onshim, the punishment that Klal Yisrael suffers as a result, but equally to Tikkunim, changes that took place even in some core categories of Jewish life, as a consequence of the Egel HaZahav. That's not everything is a punishment. Some things are just an opportunity, right, to reassess, the effectiveness of achieving, a certain goal in a particular manner, according to a particular protocol. Sometimes, there's an epiphany. When something happens, that you need to, either go in a different direction in terms of your destiny, but and that's one kind of consequence. But other times, the destiny remains the same, but the methodology, requires tweaking, by virtue of this, again, epiphanous moment. Of course, when the epiphanous moment belongs, not to people but to the Rabboni Shalom, so there's the added element, as we've noted many times, the kind of philosophical and theological conundrum, that we also find even without a crisis, the olal b'machshavto idea that we find from the very beginning of Chazal's discussion of Bereishis, right, midas Elokim and midas Hashem being the first of many examples, but particularly when it comes as a result of an event. So it isn't just, olam b'machshava. That has one, olam b'machshava, we don't see where the pressure comes from when we don't understand what the change of heart means. In the case of, an event that transpires that changes Klal Yisrael's trajectory, it's a little more understandable and a little less understandable, right? I mean, it's more understandable because, we understand what the motivation is and what changed. Namely, assuming that there is Bechiras HaAdam, which, is something that Yahadus certainly embraces, Kazdai Kreskes, soft determinism aside. The Rabbanu Shalom's plans in that respect, can change a little bit. Of course, again, since he knows it's going to happen, there's still a question, but it's a little, I guess, less of a question than the Stam Olam B'machshavtos. But in these circumstances, so the question also then becomes, are we talking about Onesh or are we talking about a Tikkun? And again, if we're talking about a Tikkun, are we talking about the same destiny, but a better methodology or a different methodology? And also the question that needs to be raised is are these kind of changes always for the worse? Or in some cases, does the extra tweaking, also provide some benefits or accentuate, the goal, maybe in a more obvious or explicit way that actually ends up being a net positive? Even though you have to be very careful with that, being no one, Chalila, is suggesting that the Chet HaEgel was a good thing. Clearly it was in every sense, it was a terrible, a lost opportunity, and it constitutes, a paradigm merit of Klal Yisrael. And again, you know, there's still a Bechiya L'Doros. We still pay for that, you know, terrible crime, even to this day. So there's no question that it was a very, very negative event. But what I'm suggesting is that some of the, you know, tikkunim going forward aren't all necessarily negative. Some of them may, because they highlight, or the epiphany highlights, and for Klal Yisrael at least accentuates in a less ambiguous way what the goal and destiny or the singular, you know, character of Klal Yisrael is. So there may end up being, you know, a better result. You know, much Laman Davidome, and we'll get to this example, you know, more concretely in just a couple of minutes, right, the process of Chet and of Tshuva in general. Right, we know that, you know, Chet is always, by definition, terrible. The word Chet itself means, you know, Chisaron, in addition to meaning sin. And it's clear that, you know, that all things being equal, our initial response to Chet is one of Evel, in a way. It's the Chitzah Mafsekes Beinenu Lebein HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and seeing it any other way being, you know, kind of making light of Chet, of Chataim, is itself an act of merit and contributes to greater Chet. That's what we mean, Avera Goreras Avera. That's partially what we mean by it. And yet we also know that, you know, both the Onesh and especially the Tikkunim that are involved in a Chet, right, can bring greater clarity and, you know, a renewed sense of commitment and even enthusiasm. And it can be an epiphany, a good epiphany, in the end. Mavakam Shabbali Tshuva Ombim, right, Ein Tzadikim Gemurim Nicholim Lamod. That, you know, that's why I've suggested in the past that one of the reasons why Hichos Tshuva, you know, is in Sefer Mada, and it's the crescendo of Sefer Mada, and because Tshuva isn't just nitrul hachet, it isn't just, you know, negating the chet, you know, it has the potential to bring you, you know, to a much better place. Again, the concept of Tshuva Me'ava, Tshuva Me'ira, you know, reflecting this and many other things as well, the Rambam's emphasis on Vidui, many things that we've spoken about in the past. So if that is true in general for Tshuva and Chet, then it is also true for even the most calamitous of Chataim. Again, no one, you know, is ever going to tell you, or if they do, it's the height of cynicism and it's, you know, rejected im todo. You know, that when we say Echtav Yashuv, Echtav Yashuv, you know, or Echtav Yom Kippur im Mechaper, you know, so, you know, Ein Maspikin Biyado La'asos Tshuva, or Eino Mechaper. Again, I don't want to go into all those details right now, but not that time of year. But, you know, the general idea is that you could say, well, B'makom Shabbali Tshuva Omdim Tzadikim Gemurim Becholim Lamod, you know, if indeed, you know, having experienced the distance, you know, or the lack of clarity, if this process, you know, brings you to a better place or to a clearer place, so the aggregate, the net result is a good one. So why not Echtav Yashuv, Echtav Yashuv? But of course, you know, anybody who's a state where he can make that calculation is a cynic, you know, for whom the tikkun part or the clarity part, you know, is a davar shelo b'li olam, and maybe a davar shelo b'li olam that will never be attained. So that's not what we're saying, chalila, but what I am saying is that when you encounter in your personal life, not you, but anybody in their personal life, you know, some sort of a crisis, and you undergo some sort of a transformation as a result, right, there's a certain phenomenology to that. It can be personal, it can be institutional, it can be national, but these are some of the things that we, you know, that we think of. In the beginning, certainly there's a, you know, an act of merit, and the loss of some idealistic standard, often, you know, a change in trajectory, often the need for both an onesh and a tikkun, and the tikkun, as I say, might be a different methodology, and then it's always important to try as much as possible to, you know, to dictate that the change in methodology doesn't leave you, you know, as in a b'dieved state, but that You know, you can meet the challenge and get back to where you were, or maybe even transcend where you were. And this is the question that we have to ask when we deal with, you know, Klal Yisrael's history as well. So whether it's, you know, the, you know, eviction from Gan Eden, you know, right in the beginning of the Torah. Again, I'm not talking about the Olam B'Machshav those for now. You know, not, you know, about Du Partzufin and Ezer Kanegdo, and not about Elohim and Hashem. You know, not about, you know, Vayasem, also the Gan Eden, you know, and Avda Shamra. I think those are all, you know, parallel kind of issues. I'm talking about, like, you know, Chataim that had, you know, irrevocable impact, you know, on the world and on Klal Yisrael. So I'm talking about, you know, the eviction from Gan Eden, you know, and what that meant in terms of reorienting man's very nature. You know, the Eitz Hadas Tov Hara, however you explain it, you know, like the Rambam or like the Rabban, the concept of Eitz Hara, of Tov and Ra, you know, what would man have been, you know, in different circumstances, and, you know, and what he became. The Mabul, as we say, you know, the first Debria, and then the refashioning of the world in the aftermath of Noach. We've talked about that in the past. You know, obviously the question of, you know, Achilas Basar is just an example of it. Again, to what extent are we talking, you know, about a loss of innocence and a loss, an irrevocable loss of an ideal? Or, you know, kind of a compensation, and maybe even a compensation which, in light of the clarity or the, you know, turmoil and the, you know, the trauma, if you will, of that particular experience, you know, brings you, as I say, to a place of greater commitment, Bali Tshuva Omdim, but I don't mean just the Tshuva itself. I also mean in terms of the specific methodology. And the same is true for things like the Egel, or, for example, the Chet HaMeraglim. Right? The Chet HaMeraglim, and particularly the impact that it had on Knisa Le'eretz Yisrael right away. The Chet HaMeraglim, again, is a Bechia L'Doros that we think, you know, affected, you know, all sorts of other, you know, relationships. A Mechiras Yosef of the brothers, and of course the Chet HaEgel, which is one of the most calamitous and horrific. You know, all those Ilmales, you know, what is an Onesh, what is a Tikkun, and to what extent do these Tikkunim constitute Bidyabeds, or just, you know, alternative ways of accomplishing, necessarily alternative ways of accomplishing the same goals, or in some cases, clearer and maybe even more lechatchila ways, which may not have been necessary, because there might have been shortcuts, you know, but maybe in the end of the day, you know, Klal Yisrael, having made its bad choices, you know, brought them, you know, to a kind of an illumination, which actually highlights more clearly. So the aggregate, not good, chalila, but at least different ways to look at these methodologies. You always have to weigh, also, you know, in light of, you know, epiphanous moments and transformative tikkunim, right, to what extent the previous, you know, categories, you know, are completely gone, right, or again, the goals remain, and how changed are they? Maybe even some of the, you know, prime elements remain. Again, getting back to the examples of, you know, Hashem and Elohim, not in the not in the Chet sense, but in the Olam B'Machshavto sense, you know, and pre and post Gan Eden and pre and post Mabul, etc. Right? To what extent are even the elements that may have contributed, you know, to misconceptions that led to, you know, historical tragedies for Klal Yisrael? You know, to what extent, you know, we still have that world. It's not just in our distant past. We still live with, you know, those ideals, with those echoes, and to what extent, you know, the combination, let's say, of what was or might have been, together with the reality of what unfolded, since there is a special hashkacha for Klal Yisrael, and the Rabbanu Shalom is a mechaper, and part of his, again, the Yud Gimel Midos Shel Rachamim appear precisely in the context of the ego, right? Ani Hashem Lefnei Achet, Ani Hashem La'achar Achet. The possibility of, again, it being an aggregate, you know, plus the concept, that aspect of tshuva, you know, comes out of the Egel story. So to what extent do we emerge like an even a stronger position, maybe, in some respects? And of course, the idea that, you know, this is not a uniform, not all of these phenomena are the same. I mentioned the Meraglim and the Egel and, you know, Gan Eden and the Babel, and of course there are many more. They don't all have to be the same. And it all doesn't have to be either, you know, a tikkun, you know, which is clearer and better, or a tikkun, you know, which acknowledges, you know, a certain defeat of a certain ideal. It may be more complicated than that. There may be different aspects and different facets. Okay. So having said that, that's kind of just a little bit of an introduction. So I thought that, you know, when it comes to the Egel, the thing to do is to try to really figure out what changed, and, you know, whether those changes really are, you know, onshin tikkunim, tikkunim that, you know, are b'diavad, or tikkunim that are l'chatchila. And I thought I would just zero in on one very dramatic one, you know, for the few moments that we have today, and maybe we'll have a chance to continue this or not. We'll see. The relationship between Luchos Rishonos and Luchos Shnios. Obviously, the Luchos, you know, represent, you know, something very monumental for Klal Yisrael. They embody, you know, Gilui Shechina itself, you know. And as we've talked for other reasons, in other contexts, that, you know, the Luchos are a separate and very singular genre in Torah. They're an overlapping genre, meaning when the Gemara is quoting the Pasuk, or developing, Gemara in Brachos Daf Hei develops the Pasuk in Mishpatim, v'ed n'luchos ha'luchos ha'evan ha'torah v'amitzvah asher kasavti l'horosam. So, you know, it's all the different genres, and luchos ha'evan is the luchos, not different girsos, but mostly. Obviously, mikra, Torah is mikra, and mitzvah is, you know, Mishnah, and, you know, Lahorosam is Talmud, and Asher Kasavti is Nevi'im and Ksuvim. So one of the things that's so interesting, and it's not only in this member of Chazal, is the fact that Luchos Ha'evan is separate from the genre of Mikra, even though Luchos Ha'evan is integrated into Mikra. Right? All the others are completely separate. The Talmud and the Mishnah and the Nevi'im and Ksuvim are all distinct. And the only thing that overlaps, you know, is the Luchos, which means that even though it's Mikra, it's also the Luchos. And this has important implications for, you know, it being an encapsulation of Kol Torah Kula, and we talked about in the past, I'm sure, the experiential part and the standing part, you know, and so on and so forth. But the point I'm trying to make now is that the Luchos, you know, represents something very singular in Yadus, symbolic of Gilui Shechina, or encapsulating Gilui Shechina. The fact that they might encapsulate Kol Torah Kula, or Oktariag Mitzvos at least, we'll get to Kol Torah Kula in just a second, is another expression of this. And again, the Kol HaDvarim, Rashi's comment based on the Medrash, you know, about all the Dibros being together and then being separate, and of course, Shamar and Zachar, and Los Achmar and Los Asave, and all of the, everything about the Luchos, you know, speaks of Gilui Shechina, and in a very, very singular way. So the idea that, you know, of Shvira Saluchos, such a, in its own right, you know, the response to the trauma of the Egel being the trauma of Shvira Saluchos, and the way that it's described in Psukim, the way it's described in Chazal, you know, is all adds, you know, to this mystique. Like you could just imagine, the world waited for the moment of Gilui Shechina, and Gilui Shechina is encapsulated in these Luchos that are written b'michtav, you know, be'etzba lokim, michtav Hashem, you know, and that had all these miraculous properties, according to Chazal, you know, the mem and the samach, you know, were stood, you know, even though there was chakika, and you could read it from both sides, and we'll get to, you know, what, you know, exactly it included in just a second. It might have certainly have included references or remazim to Taryag Mitzvos, but, you know, maybe even more than that. And then Moshe Rabbeinu, without a Tzivui Hashem, right, you know, just destroyed it. That's also an interesting parsha, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, Eved Hashem, the ultimate mitzvah, right, instinctively knew that that was the right thing to do. Can you imagine, like any human being making that decision on his own. Like only a Moshe Rabbeinu could. But, you know, Yishar Kochacha Asher Shivarta, the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, endorses it, but that's after the fact. He didn't get a green light. Yeah, that's an amazing thing in its own right. And again, what it says about A, Moshe Rabbeinu's deep understanding, and of course his empathy for Klal Yisrael, also his understanding of basically that these luchos were no longer valid, is just, again, we're not talking about that right now, but that's, in terms of the chush, the instinct of Moshe Rabbeinu, that's just a remarkable part of the story. But everything about the Shviras HaLucha, about the Luchos Rishonos no longer being, you know, part of Klal Yisrael's, let's say, more direct, destiny, and Shviras HaLuchos is extremely, not only just dramatic, but extremely calamitous, right, in its own right. But the replacement of Luchos Rishonos with Luchos Shnios then becomes an unbelievable opportunity, kind of a window into analyzing this question, namely, to what extent post-Egel were Klal Yisrael able to, retain, their footing, and equally, actually, they came back with a stronger, again, more, enlightened, and intense commitment, or they lost things b'di'eved, or both. They lost some things b'di'eved, and never to regain them, and have to live out all future generations with a little bit of a what if, but at the same time maybe they also in aggregate came out in a stronger way. So examining Luchos Rishonos and Luchos Shnios is a method, at least, again, obviously it's an inexact form process, but it's something to look at, as is an analysis of the Mishkan pre and post Egel, assuming that that we don't take the Ein Mukta Muchar Batorah. Again, if you say Ein Mukta Muchar Batorah and you think that the entire Mishkan is a response to the Egel, so then of course the analysis is having a Mishkan and whatever expanse or confining motifs that includes, versus not needing it, I guess. But of course, if we take the view that that the Mishkan was part of the L'chatchila agenda of Klal Yisrael, but that post-Egel, the subtle changes in order, in emphasis, etc., then those elements become something to analyze or to study. To try to determine, these issues and these elements. There are those, for example, who have suggested, again, to do that. But there are a lot of mefarshim, a lot of midrashim about it, which is the presentation of the kalim, the relationship between the bias and the kalim, the focus on, the supernatural part of the Mishkan as opposed to the human input part, which is the main thing I'm going to get back to. The relationship between Shabbos and the Mishkan becomes an important aspect. Again, Farshim note that in Kisisa, Shabbos follows the Mishkan, and then right in the beginning of Vayakel, Shabbos precedes the Mishkan. So a lot of the Mefarshim ask, why it's both places and why the order is switched. The Kli Yakar has a very nice piece on that, and we'll get back to that in just a couple of minutes. But even the presentation of Shabbos itself, prior to and post Egel, is subtly different in terms of some of its emphases, reflecting again maybe either overcompensation or a different methodology, a loss, or given clarity a net gain. Hard to say. But let me focus just for a couple of minutes on the Luchos Shnios. One factor is perfectly clear. And that is that the Luchos Shnios had something, that was superior to Luchos Rishonos in one way. That's the one I'm not going to speak about so much. And that is the lack of Kolos Ubrakim. That's what Chazal point out, and Rashi quotes in Perek Lamed Dalid, here Pasuk Gimel, that Ish lo yaleh imach, harishonos ha'idei shahayu betshuos v'kolos ukehilos shalta b'hen ayin ra'a, ein v'chayafe min atznius. When Chazal want to explain why the luchos shnios succeeded where the luchos rishonos did not, right? They speak about, you know, kolos of rakim, you know, as having a deleterious, an adverse effect. But again, that's a great little window into precisely the kind of thinking that we're examining, because, you know, clearly the kolos of rakim of Har Sinai and everything that went with it is part of what made it memorable and singular. That's part of, you know, Yom HaShishi, the day that the world, you know, waited for. Again, it's remarkable that, according to one view in Chazal, you know, similarly, Moshe Rabbeinu kind of held back that day because he felt that Klal Yisrael weren't fully prepared for it. You know, like the breaking of the Luchos, maybe not as dramatic. You can just imagine that, you know, this is a day that the whole world is anticipating, Bishvil HaTorah Shenikra Reishis and Yom HaShishi, and Moshe Rabbeinu through in his, again, this, we don't have any record that, you know, he consulted with the Rabbeinu Shalom, you know, through his own authority as Eved Hashem, instinctively is able to delay, you know, what the world, you know, was hanging on. But again, obviously he instinctively felt that Klal Yisrael needed extra hachana, and in the end of the day, Goy Milsalam Afreya, that the Kolos of Rakim and, you know, the Gilui Shechina was too much for Klal Yisrael alone. But of course, that still is part of the legacy of the Aseres HaDibros and Maimed Har Sinai and everything that goes along with it. So this is a great example where the compensation or the, you know, the broadening, you know, there being an Ein L'chayafe Min Atznius element alongside, you know, the Kolos of Rakim and the Chuos and so on, you know, turns out to be, you know, a more complex, right, but a more ideal formula, you know, in the long run. So that's one issue, one which requires much more discussion. But of course, the other issue is the one that some of Farshim touch on, and that is, or like two related issues: how miraculous, you know, were the second Luchos vis-a-vis the first, number one, and in particular, how comprehensive were they? What impact did they have on the notion of Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh? So this is, again, a major, major debate. If you look at the Psukim, the clear impression that you get is that the Luchos Rishonos were Michtav Elokim, Etzba Elokim, and the second Luchos, you know, on the one hand say, you know, that they're supposed to be like the first Luchos, it's part of the Nisuach of the Torah, but we're also seem to be told that you know, that the that Moshe Rabbeinu, right, himself is supposed to write these luchos. So psal luchos shnei luchos avanim karishonim v'chasabti ala luchos es adivarim asher hayu ala luchos arishonim asher shibarta. But you know, we're also told that you know, that Moshe Rabbeinu writes it, and the question is, you know, what does that mean? And there is a huge debate among the Mefarshim just in terms of the facts. So in Medrash Rabbah, which Rashi also quotes, you know, Ksav Lecha, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, HaLuchos HaRishonos Ani Kasavti Osam, Ve'etz Be'elokim, Aval HaShniyim Ksav Ata. Whereas the Ramban, in Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Chaf Ches, among others, suggests that that has a very limited significance, and that basically the Rabbanu Shalom authored and did the act of ksiva in both cases. Indeed, Perek Lamed Daled Pasuk Chaf Ches, which is a pivotal pasuk, as was Vayomer Hashem Moshe Ksav Lecha Es HaDvar Ma'ele, which is where many of the Mefarshim get the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the second Luchos. Ki al pi HaDvar Ma'ele Karasi Itcha Bris Ve'es Yisrael. Got a very interesting, kind of a strange reading pasuk. Some Mefarshim say that this refers to the Luchos, while others, including the Ramban, suggest that it works, that it refers to a Sefer HaBris, but has nothing to do with the Luchos Shnios. Again, Rashi, Alatar, does think that it's connected. Lo Atorah Shoy Lichtov Torah Shebaal Peh, that it refers to the Luchos, and that it refers to the exclusion of Torah Shebaal Peh from the second lucha. So there is a debate about the not the authorship in a real way, but the physical, you know, construction of the second luchos and how different it was. Meshech Chachma, for example, has a very interesting piece where he argues that luchos shnios were written by Moshe Rabbeinu, right, based on Perek Lamed Dalet Pasuk Aleph, and however that they were nechkak or nechkaku on al yedei the Rabbanu Shel Olam, so they exceeded the ksiva and the chakika. That's of course an interesting compromise. So the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Dalet speaks about again the miraculous nature of the chafetza of luchos. I mean that they were, you know, the mem and the samach, you know, even the capacity to read them from both sides, right? Again, which obviously it's not just a divine trick. It has to be a point to a divine trick, you know, implying again the scope and the, you know, the nature of Torah itself. So Meshech Chachma says that although the process was a little bit different and it was important to have Ksivas Adam before Chakikas Hashem, that the primary, you know, nature of the luchos was the same. The Malbim, this is an example, thinks that, we'll see in a moment the Beis Halevi, that the first luchos, in addition to being on both sides, had the Aseres HaDibros on one side, and the Kol HaTorah Kula, and Dikduke Torah, the Nigla and the Nistar, you know, somehow on the other side as well. Again, I don't know what that looks like or means, so don't ask me. But whatever that is, some sort of a special manifestation. But when it comes to the Luchos Shnios, right, this whole added, you know, material, right, did not exist. All you had were the Luchos, and he's not sure whether or not, you know, you also had Chakika Mishnei Tzadim, you know, or what that would have included, etc. The Beis Halevi, in his famous last drasha on the Tshuvos of the Beis Halevi, has a very, very amazing piece, became very well known. Again, zeroing in on the Pasuk Perek Lamed Aleph and Pasuk Chaf Zayin in the Rashi that I mentioned, where he suggests that the Luchos Rishonos, you know, like that Malbim, included Kol HaTorah Kula, all of Torah Shebitzah, but also all of Torah Shebal Peh, and Agadah, and everything, basically. Again, in some miraculous manifestation. All of that was physically present. Obviously, you needed, you know, some sort of a guide in order to decipher it. That would seem to be clear, you know, no matter what. But again, obviously, symbolically, it's so significant to say that it's, you know, katuv and kakuk, you know, on a physical, in a physical text. And that was what happened in Luchos Rishonos, and he tries to prove that from many, many sources. It's a very fascinating Beis Halevi. Maybe if I speak more about this, I'll go into more detail. However, he argues that Luchos Shnios, you know, only had the Aseres HaDibros, implies that, you know, maybe they had the rest of Torah Shebichsav as well, and, you know, a lot of Achronim or Leino Mefarshim have trouble with that, like, where do you see that, or there are contrary indications to that, including Rav Elbel in a piece that he wrote in his Perush al Torah, implying that Luchos Shnios only had, you know, the Aseres HaDibros. Doesn't seem like they even had the rest of Mikra, you know, even in any kind of magical form. But certainly no Torah Shebal Peh. That's his suggestion. And in that sense, it was like this massive... that's how he explains, you know, why it is that Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchos, why it became heavy, why the Osios were Porchos, that somehow the transformation that took place as a result of the Egel, you know, made all the, you know, all this extra material, you know, no longer viable, you know, for Klal Yisrael as a ksav, and therefore that's symbolically what the Medrash means when it says that the osios were parchos and that it became, you know, too heavy, meaning that the physical and, of course, just by virtue of the content change of the, or the need for there to be a content change of the luchos, right? That was part of the story of Shviras Haluchos. But what's fascinating is that if you look at the Beis Halevi, he has this whole development that is really amazing. But how does he explain it? So ironically, even though he says some amazing things about Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat Peh, which I'll have to leave for another time because we're running out of time, but let me just leave you with the basic idea and a suggestion. His basic idea is that this transformation has a very narrow base. And that is, the Gemara says in Eruvin, Daf Nun Daled, that in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel, Klal Yisrael were vulnerable to being exiled for their chatayim. In other words, one of the Omales is that Omale Chatu Yisrael, if there hadn't been an Egel, then whatever mistakes Klal Yisrael were going to make in the future, right, it wouldn't imperil, you know, their ability, you know, to remain in Eretz Yisrael, or to remain, you know, in a protected, insular, or somewhat insular environment. And part of the consequence, as an onesh, and maybe also as a consequence, this is certainly not a tikkun, right, because it's certainly not positive. Not a tikkun b'di'eved, and not a tikkun certainly even less a tikkun l'chatkila. This is just a consequence, is that from now on, Klal Yisrael had the, you know, we're subject to galus as well. And since the Medrash says, I brought it or not, since the Medrash, when it explains the importance of Torah Shebaal Peh not being written down, why is it that Dvarim Shebaal Peh Yata Rasha L'Kosvam? So this is, Tosfos quotes this in Gittin and Samach Amar Aleph, but Shmos Rabbah, which says, Ksovli wrote Rubei Torasi, right, Kazar Nechashavu, B'Shah Shenigla Kodesh Baruch Hu B'Sinai Litan Torah L'Yisrael, Amar L'Moshe Al HaSeder, Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, Agada, Omer Lefanav, Rabbanu Shalom, Echtov, Osa, Lohem. This is like, you know, part of the basis of the Beis Halevi. I'll write it all down. Omer Lo, Eini Mevakesh Litna Lohem, Biksav, Bipnei, Shegoli Lefanai, right, Sheakum Asidim Lishlot Bahem, Velitel Osa Mehem, Ela HaMikra, Ninosa Lohem, Bemichtav, HaMishnah, Vatalmud, Vagoda, Alpeh. So the Beis Halevi says, well, that's the difference between Luchos Rishonos and Luchos Shnios. Luchos Rishonos, there was this threat of Galus, you know, didn't exist. Again, Klal Yisrael's Chataim would have been neutralized in a very different way. And therefore, there was no reason to confine, you know, Torah Shebichsav to Torah Shebichsav, and that's not to expose the rest of Torah Shebaal Peh. There was no danger of somehow it falling into the wrong hands, whatever that means. That's part of what I want to mention. But, you know, post-Egel, that was no longer viable because that's when the stricture of Torah Shebaal Peh, you know, not being a Nitan Likasev, you know, came into being. So, again, my time is almost up. But I'd like to suggest as a... whether you accept the facts of this or not, which is a very big debate among the Mefarshim, the truth is, the irony is that the Gra, you know, was of the opinion that all of Torah Shebaal Peh really does exist, not in the Aseres HaDibros, but in Torah Shebichsav. And that if people only had, you know, the right, you know, depth and keen methodology, to decipher it, then they would find all of Torah Shebaal Peh berumas b'Torah Shebichsav. Of course, that the Gra himself sometimes does this, and sometimes in ways that are, illuminating, and sometimes in ways that are a little more, you know, mysterious, we'll say. But that's for another time. But that's not the same as what the Beis Halevi is suggesting, you know, took place in the Luchos Rishonos. Again, clearly they needed to be deciphered, but, you know, obviously they were also there, you know, in a much more present way. But I would like to suggest that instead of this being a consequence, the Beis Halevi's perspective, so there are those who disagree with the assumption that this ever was the case in the Luchos Rishonos, but let's work with it for the moment, because it's Beis Halevi. It's an amazing piece, and many people were Mekabel it. It's a very well-known piece. But I'd like to suggest, based on what I said before, is a slightly different perspective on the whole change. That's where the Beis HaLevi relegates it to a kind of technicality, you know, Torah Shebaal Peh, you know, is for the sake of, you know, preserving, you know, intact, you know, the legacy of Klal Yisrael as a singular legacy, Morasha Kehilas Yaakov, and that, you know, no longer was possible, you know, in through Torah Shebichsav in the aftermath of the Egel. What I prefer to think is that this is a tweaking or a different methodology of accomplishing what Klal Yisrael was really all about to begin with, and I think that also has to do with the question of being vulnerable to Galus, but I think that the relationship is more indirect. And the idea, I'll just mention now, and then maybe we'll expand on it next time, is as follows. The Egel itself, you know, as an egregious theological error, reflected, you know, some very important misconceptions. Most of them subtle, but, you know, notwithstanding their subtlety, devastatingly, you know, problematic. And one of the most was the relationship between, you know, the human and the spiritual. If you just read the psukim themselves, and I have like 2 minutes to say this, so I'm not going to. Ha'ish Moshe, where's Ha'ish Moshe? Two opposite things happened, you know, in the background of the Egel calamity. And these opposite things, normally you would think, well, you know, if things are opposite, they should be mutually exclusive, and they can't both be connected to the same problem. But national confusion, you know, typically integrates, you know, hysteria, and confusion by its nature is illogical, and often integrates things that don't make sense or that are incompatible. The two incompatibilities were two extreme views of man. One is man is basically worthless, and therefore any involvement that he has is interchangeable. He's a hechsher mi'alma, he's a means to an end. After all, he's not a spiritual being. And the other, of course, which is the possibility, you know, of crossing the line and the ability of a human being to become a kind of a god, a kind of an Elohim. On the one hand, they said that Moshe was a ish, and, you know, if he's not here, we can exchange him with someone else. The Egel, in that respect, completely disrespected, you know, Moshe's role. And, you know, anytime you say that someone is easily exchangeable and you can't even wait, you know, when he's 5 minutes late, you know, to exchange him, or you lose faith in him so quickly, the implication is that he, you know, is a technician. And a technician can always be exchanged. So we'll get somebody else, some other symbol, some other national unifying, rallying, you know, cry, etc. But the other, of course, is that Moshe Rabbeinu's not coming, you know, is a reason for panic. Because Moshe Rabbeinu had assumed, at the same time, the status of a kind of semi-god for Klal Yisrael. And when he didn't come, that rattled them too. So they were caught kind of between these two extremes and looking for some other, you know, divine creation, artificial divinity, you know, to feed the frenzy, you know, of what they had become. So that's, I think, very meduyak in the psukim, if you read them. These two opposite views. The truth is that the Rambam, in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, speaks about, you know, the genesis of Avodah Zarah from the very beginning. You know, he talks about how Avodah Zarah really begins with a misunderstanding of means and ends, right? You know, the stars and everything else, you know, that you see as a gateway to the Ribono Shel Olam, you know, but then somehow it all gets blurred and they become, you know, intrinsically important in their own right. So they start off as, you know, Hakshayrim, and then they, you know, this kind of this confusion, and it can be a confusion that takes place at the same time. We see it in other religions. It's a phenomenon in spirituality or religiosity. Of course, the proper perspective is like the Rav develops in the beginning of Ish Halacha. You know, typical religions, you know, a man tries to flee from the world. And, you know, in science, you know, there is no heavens and everything is material. But you know, the proper perspective is that man has the ability, you know, as an Isha Hadama, to rise to the level of being an Ishu Elohim, not being an Elohim, you know, but not just being Afar Mino Adama, who's easily exchangeable or replaceable either. Meaning he has a unique capacity, right, as a human being, to have spiritual value. But by definition, never to be a divinity, right, but also not merely to be a means to an end. So in a way, that was the problem of the Egel. And the solution, or the tikkun, you know, when it came to the Luchos in particular, was to move away a little bit from Mikhtav Elohim, or Etzba Elohim, and to move away from integrating, right, all of the Torah Shebaal Peh, which represents, in particular, you know, the input of man into the process of halacha, but albeit, again, on the basis of a kind of an inner logic, as we've been discussing, we talked about Nasav and Ishma, right? But to move that away from Etzba Elohim and to make it clear that that is intended to be the contribution, at least the responsibility to convey it and transmit it properly, the range of Elav Elo Divra Elohim Chaim that is legitimate in understanding and discussing it, the ability of people to be insiders in the system, all of those things are intended to be, you know, man's prerogative as he strives to become an Ish Ho Elohim. So in a sense, what really happened was that the Luchos Rishonos, it became abundantly, I'm taking the Beis HaLevi's Mahalach, but I'm just kind of idealizing it. You know, the format of Luchos Rishonos, you know, came to be obsolete or inappropriate for the, you know, given the, you know, the character of Klal Yisrael's misunderstanding and their state of development. It became important, you know, that there be a Luchos Shnios, which accentuated man's ability to be responsible, to be a junior partner with the Ribono Shel Olam, to be an Eved Hashem and an Ishu Elohim, while at the same time being subservient to, and whose spiritual status is defined by his, you know, humility and his capacity of Batel Ritzoncha, Lirtzono. And what would be better, what better way to illustrate that than a Luchos, which is either some sort of combination of Elohim and Adam, particularly written by Moshe Rabbeinu, right, who was an Ish Elohim and an Eved Hashem in this way, who had the ability to delay Maimed Har Sinai and to destroy, to make the call to destroy the Luchos. And by doing so, in a way that separated Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, putting the full responsibility of transmitting accurately Torah Shebaal Peh, as well as accentuating thereby the capacity for human input into that process with its range in the hands of humans. And indeed, that's part of the reason that Medrash says that it's so important that Torah Shebaal Peh not fall into other people, that it be a legacy of Klal Yisrael, because this is what sets Klal Yisrael as a Mamlechas Kohanim Vegoy Kadosh apart. Right, the commitment not to Zion mitzvos, but to Taryag mitzvos, and to everything that goes with it, is all part of this, you know, idea, you know, of an Am Segula, you know, that can strive to be an Ish Elohim, and, you know, that has to work hard with Amal and Yegia, right, to hold on to the totality of Torah, and, you know, to take responsibility, Torah Hashem Tamima, but Lo B'Shamayim He, to apply it, you know, to human situations, but to do so with integrity. Once it's all written down, right, it just becomes, you know, accessible in such a way that it's no longer a methodology or a process that is, in, you know, that requires that level of immersion and investment, and which is, you know, the legacy of Chachmei HaMesorah, just becomes, you know, it becomes another text. Indeed, the capacity for Yisrael to be Nigla after the Egel is possibly connected to that as well. So that the Tikkun, in this particular case, you know, is not necessarily a B'diabed even, but a way it caused a greater or encouraged a greater sense of clarity about something which was the destiny of Klal Yisrael to begin with. And if this is the case, you can understand one final thing. I know I'm over time, so this is the one other point. And that is that something that the Gra points out in the Deres Eliyahu and other Mefarshim as well. And that is that it seems in the aftermath of the Egel, even though Klal Yisrael is chastised, and with all of the, this is my addition or my formulation, with all of the Amales, there are also indications that Klal Yisrael's relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam is more intense. Certainly, the ability to have a physical Mishkan, and some of the Hashgacha of the Ribbono Shel Olam's being present, you know, Ba'anan, you know, and so on. The Gra says, and he has this in his Perush al Torah as well, an Ava Rabba, you know, Chem LeGedola, Chamalta Aleinu, that, you know, in the aftermath of the Kapara of the Egel, in some respects, Klal Yisrael's kesher to the Ribbono Shel Olam is intensified, as I alluded to earlier. That could just be a din in tshuva, right? But it could be, in addition, that this particular tshuva, by clarifying, you know, and by precluding, you know, certain subtle but critical misconceptions, basically put Klal Yisrael, in some respects at least, on a stronger spiritual footing. Okay, stop here. Thank you.